Good morning, everyone. My name is João, and I'm the host of the Software Crafts podcast. Today with us, we have Ken Power. Ken is an engineering leader with more than 20 years' experience in software engineering. His current focus is working with intelligent, autonomous systems, including software for self-driving cars and edge services. His focus is the intersection of people, product development, strategy, architecture, leadership, agility, and engineering culture. Ken is an independent consultant and product developer. In addition, he holds a research fellowship with LERO, the Irish Software Research Centre, where his current research focus is connected autonomous vehicles. He's also an associate lecturer with the National University of Ireland in Galway, where he teaches strategy and planning, system analysis and design, and large-scale transformation. He's a speaker at leading international conferences on architecture, software engineering, agility, and related topics. Ken has a Bachelor of Engineering in Software Engineering, a Master's degree in Artificial Intelligence, and a PhD in Complex Adaptive Systems. He holds patents in virtualization and network management. He has been working with Agile and Lean approaches to product development since 1999. Hi, Ken, and thanks for your time to be with us in the show.
Hi, yeah, thank you very much for inviting me. Pleasure to be here.
Yes, this is going to be a fun episode. And to start, I'm going to throw the heuristic right away. And the heuristic is use a systematic mechanism of learning that I think that is very connected to your interests. Yeah. What do you think about this?
We're very much connected to my interests and to, I suppose, my approach to life in general, as well as work-related topics. So the heuristic from Simon Wardley's book, I think, is great, very valuable. I'll circle back to the mapping context in a moment, but I think in entering into the discussion, it's useful to have a definition of learning. You know, so yes, use a systematic mechanism of learning is a valuable heuristic, but what do we mean by learning? And for a definition of learning that's useful on a day-to-day basis, I like to draw on the work of the educator and author John Holt. So nothing at all to do with product development. He's a famous US-based educator and author. But he wrote that learning to him means making more sense of the world around us and being able to do more things in it. So I find that to be a useful guiding definition when it comes to thinking about developing a systematic mechanism of learning. So when we think about developing a systematic mechanism, then we can focus on, well, what things can we do in the world then to make the world more accessible, more interesting, and more transparent? And for a lot of learning, there's a foundation of trust implied. And sometimes in learning, you know, we can talk about individual learning, my personal learning journey, your personal learning journey. And when we're working together in a team or in organizations, there's our shared collective learning journey. And sometimes there's a useful distinction to be made between those.
Indeed. And it's very interesting how you pick up these and dissect the heuristic and what it means. I have a few questions. So regarding practices and starting with the latter, right, there is difference between individual learning, what I learn, what you learn, what mechanism do we have versus team. So my question is, what are your practices to learn as individual and how they change across the years? Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. So my personal practices over the years, I tend to have a couple of different approaches. So one, on the one side, I have a structured approach to some topics, you know. So for example, a few years ago, I wanted to get more heavily involved in artificial intelligence and deep learning work and autonomous systems. So as well as reading broadly on the subject and attending conferences, things like that, I also decided to do a part-time master's degree in artificial intelligence. So those are very structured approach to that very broad topic of artificial intelligence and deep learning and autonomous systems. As well as that, I'll do a lot of exploratory, opportunistic learning. So for example, I love Twitter as a learning tool. I'll often spend a few minutes just scrolling Twitter to look for nuggets of wisdom and information on topics that are of interest to me, whether it's software architecture or organizations or strategy or AI or related topics. And I'll find people who are doing interesting work in those areas, follow them on Twitter, read their blogs, things like that. And then there's also kind of collective learning. So I'll whether it's in an organization setting or just a, let's say, a peer group setting, I like the idea of and the structure of things like learning circles and cohorts. I'm fortunate enough to be a part of, and over the years have been part of, different cohorts and learning circles, both formal and informal. So, groups of friends and peers who will get together and discuss a topic or help each other improve our shared understanding or learning on a topic. And that works well in organizations as well, in more formal settings. If there's a particular set of topics that are relevant to the organization, it could be working towards an AWS certification, for example, having a learning cohort around that, or it could be on a topic like software architecture, having a learning circle or a cohort around that. So my approach varies from the very structured guided approach of formal education to almost opportunistic, haphazard, exploratory learning, to shared journey learning, and many things in between. So I love reading, love listening to podcasts, all sorts of things. I could go on in the answer to that question.
Yeah, I can imagine, and it's very interesting to see how you structured your learning, right? Because also you are a seasoned professional in our industry. Also, you teach in universities, that the formal learning. So yeah. My question, and this question is based on your experience as a manager, as a consultant, do you think that organizations have enough cohorts for learning, or do we need to do a lot on that area to enable this collective learning?
So I think your question cuts to the heart of organization culture. And often when facing that question with organizations, whether it's an organization I have a leadership role in or if an organization that I'm consulting with, that's one of the things I look for. What is the organization's attitude and approach to learning? That tells me a lot about the culture of an organization. And if I'm in a leadership position in an organization, either as an internal employee or as a consultant, then one of the values that I bring to that situation is learning. And I know that I can be a role model or an example for learning. I know that I can articulate the value that learning brings to the organization. But I think in any organization, it starts with the leadership of the organization. Does the leadership of the organization, and by leadership, I acknowledge that everybody has the potential to be a leader in an organization. Absolutely. I'm specifically talking about leadership roles with responsibility for the direction of an organization, for the strategy of an organization. Is that group of people, whether it's the CEO or the senior vice president or the general manager of the organization, does that person and that leadership team value learning? And are they instilling the value of learning throughout the organization and recognizing the value of learning throughout the organization? And hopefully the answer is either yes, they are, or they would like to, but are not quite sure how to, or something in between. On the other extreme, we come across organizations where, for one reason or another, usually it's not, in fact, always it's not It's not due to a lack of desire for learning, but you come across organizations where sometimes they feel there isn't time for learning, or there's too much pressure to get work done, to focus on learning, or whatever the case may be. But I think it starts at the top in organizations. Are we setting a tone that values learning, that says, yes, learning is important? And then what does that mean? Because that needs to follow through to some tangible action on behalf of the organization.
Yeah, indeed. And I was poking your experience because I had similar experiences, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes organizations have the value, but then have difficulties to operationalize the values.
Exactly.
So I was taking your take there. And I was also now also poking your previous research. So you did a PhD on complex adaptive systems. How learning plays a role with complex adaptive systems?
Yeah, so my particular focus in that was to look at software development, software engineering, product development organizations as complex adaptive systems, and understand how things happen in complex adaptive systems. So one of the focuses I took, or one of the focus areas I looked at, was, well, how does work flow through organizations? And you know, I studied 10 large complex organizations as part of that work, global software development, global technology organizations, to understand how things happen in such organizations, and looking at them through the lens of complex adaptive systems. So understanding that organizations are complex adaptive systems, what does that mean? Well, it means there are certain patterns of behavior at play in these organizations. And when we look at how work flows through these organizations, very often there are impediments that slow things down, that get in the way. And one thing that separates the more, let's say, the more resilient organizations from the less resilient organizations is an ability to learn, an ability to adapt effectively to surprises. And one thing, not particularly a surprise maybe, but one thing that I found through the study was that the more adaptive, the more resilient the organization, the better they were at learning, at having deliberate approaches to learning. And one concrete example maybe is from SRE culture that's emerged from Google and AWS and other organizations, is the idea of blameless postmortems. I think that's a fascinating idea, because it takes some of the human pressure out of the equation when things go wrong, and it allows us to focus on the situation and the problem rather than focusing on blame. And that creates an environment where people can feel safe to admit that they made a mistake, or that a mistake happened, and that learning needs to occur.
Yeah, it's I think, well, first of all, thanks for sharing connect the dots per se, right? Because you had an hypothesis. And what is very interesting is that software, or the act of creating software in a social technical system, it's pretty new for us as humans. We are doing this just for a few decades versus building houses for a few thousand years, right? So the body of your knowledge is lower. But what I'm really happy is that there are more research going there, right? That is your research. Also, we have Accelerate from Nicole Humble and King, which is pretty cool that now we start to have evidence how learning, how blameless postmortems, how culture is so important, that can be a tipping point in how we organize ourselves.
No, absolutely. And you mentioned Nicole and Jez and Jean's work. That's absolutely fantastic body of work that they've produced over the years. And I reference it in the PhD work as well. Very valuable for understanding what makes for a highly effective software development organization. And I think they've shown many valuable things, but that learning is also part of what makes for an effective organization.
Yeah, indeed. And now changing a bit, because I was taking notes and also making sense about the interview. So in the beginning, you talk about definition of learning. So it's the sense of making sense of the world. And also personally, you said that you go to Twitter and you take little nuggets of wisdom, and then you start trying to make sense of the world. Yeah. Do you create maps for these?
I do. So there's a number of tools that I use for my own personal learning and also for the different shared learning contexts that I mentioned. So if I'm coaching somebody or mentoring an engineer or an architect, I'll use these same tools with them. Same if I'm working with the team, I'll use these same tools. So one is Wardley maps. So we started the conversation with a reference to one of the Wardley mapping heuristics on systematic mechanism of learning. I love maps in general as a tool to basically understand the landscape of a problem space. So I mentioned AI, for example, earlier on. That's a very broad term, but digging more specifically into it, one of the areas that I'm working in is on software for self-driving cars, for example. So I'll use Wardley maps to understand the strategic landscape of where the software for self-driving cars are headed over the next few years, and dig deeper into that. Embedded devices such as edge processing devices is a relatively new area, for example. So for the last few years, there's been a lot of hype about artificial intelligence and deep learning becoming more pervasive in the industry. And a lot of that processing is happening in big data centers. But there's also a lot of decision making that needs to happen at the edge of the network in smaller, lower powered devices. There isn't always time to send data back to the data center for processing, for example. And yet some of that happens in self-driving cars. Some decisions need to be made on board the car itself. There's lots of other examples of devices where decision-making needs to happen more closely to the device itself. So in cases like that, it's useful to develop a mapping to understand that landscape. And I like the way Wardley maps, for example, can help us lay out the territory from understanding a product's landscape in terms of genesis, custom, what's productized right now in that space, what's a commodity, because not even though the space itself is relatively new, not everything in that space is necessarily new. So so 5G is emerging as a new technology area that we can leverage, for example. But there's a lot of there's a lot of internet protocols that are relatively commoditizable that we can just leverage in that space. So summarizing a short answer to that question is yes, Wardley maps are a very useful way of mapping the strategic landscape of a space like connected autonomous vehicles or self-driving cars or edge devices. And that's one type of mapping tool that I use.
Any other mapping tools that you want to share?
Yeah, well, one I'll mention is the ThoughtWorks Technology Radar. I find that very, very useful. I mean, ThoughtWorks do a great job of publishing and updating their technology radar a couple times a year. So well worth checking out in general as something that maps the technology landscape into languages and frameworks, tools, approaches, and so on. What I like to do for myself is develop a personalized technology radar. So the ThoughtWorks version is by necessity covering the industry as a whole, and it's very varied and covers, I think there's 98 items or blips on the current technology radar, and fascinating to understand as a broad stroke look at the industry. But what's useful as well is to be able to think for myself, well, what are the 2 to 3 things in each area, tools and frameworks, for example, that I want to learn about over the coming year? And what are the things that I've adopted over the last 6 months? You know, so developing a personal radar, I find to be a very useful guide on my kind of continual learning journey. And I also find it to be a really useful tool to use with people that I'm coaching or mentoring, or to use with teams that I'm leading or working with as well. Yeah, I'll, as part of, for example, evolving and sustaining an architecture or governing an architecture for a large system, it's useful to have a dedicated technology radar for that architecture and that organization to help us reason about what are the tools and frameworks and methods and approaches that are important in the context of this architecture.
Cool. Thanks for sharing. I think that the audience appreciate how do you view the world. So I also urge the audience, if you don't know, you can engage with us on social media or can. So and take these practices with you. I personally find those interesting as well. I don't do a personal take radar, but I do lots of worldly mapping that can help. And one recurring wording that is popping up on this episode is making sense of the world. So yes. When you talk about making sense of the world, are you connecting to the Knevin? Making sense that you are referring to?
Yeah, very much so. So I've been using Knevin for a long time now. And let's see. I mean, I went through the process of the train the trainer stuff with Knevin as well, with the Cognitive Edge team. I find that to be a very useful, incredibly useful framework for making sense of the world. And actually part of my PhD research was on using sense making. So sense making in effect is a way of understanding and taking action in complex systems. So a big focus of my PhD research was on sense making in complex adaptive systems. So going back to source material on from people like Carl Veit and Brendan Irvin and Gary Klein and others, as well as the work of Dave Snowden and the folks at Cognitive Edge. Sense making I find to be an incredibly useful way of looking at the world so that we can take context appropriate action to situations we're facing. And when I say we, I mean, an important aspect of sense making for me is it's a set of approaches that we collectively use to look at our problems. It's not about somebody from outside looking in and trying to make sense of our problems. It's a set of practices and tools and approaches that become part of our toolbox to help us collectively navigate the systems that we're part of on a continuous basis. So you mentioned Knevin. You know, not everything that we face on a day-to-day basis is necessarily complex. So not everything in a complex system is complex. Some things can be ordered and straightforward and have identifiable root causes and have clear action paths, even in complex architectures and complex systems and complex organizations. And on the other hand, there are things that we just can't know the answer to without further experimentation or investigation. And it's useful to be able to distinguish between those types of ordered system approaches and unordered system approaches. And of course, Knevin then further breaks those down into things like clear and complicated and complex and chaotic, and disorder in the middle is a useful concept as well. But absolutely. I mean, short answer to your question is yes, sense making and the Knevin framework in particular, very useful tools for guiding learning in complex systems.
Yeah. Thanks to have direct connection. I had this assumption, but now we make the assumption clear.
Absolutely.
And now trying to bring everything together, because also these subjects are deep subjects, right? We talk about edge computing and worldly mapping about strategy and now making sense of the world. And now my question is, because I'm inspired by your background, people cannot see your background, but pretty much is a graph with edges and nodes. Do you think that now with the emerging of edge computing for use cases like self-driving car, low power devices that need to make decisions, will we start also to have truly distributed organizations? rather than an hierarchical organization trying to produce a distributed system?
Well, so I always fall back to Conway's law as a starting point for any discussion around organization structure in that sort of context. And of course, our organization structure reflects the architecture reflects the organization structure that we have. And one thing that I've learned over the years is to evolve the organization structure of an organization. Sometimes we look at organization structures as if they're permanent things, whereas having a more fluid approach to how we organize around the things that we're building or creating is actually a useful skill for an organization to have, being more fluid and adaptable and dynamic in how we're organizing around the thing we're building or the service we're providing is something that can build resilience in an organization. So, I mean, the short answer to your question is, I think, yes, absolutely. I think as the systems we're building become increasingly distributed, increasingly diverse, increasingly more demanding in terms of the capabilities our users expect of them, the capabilities they need to enable, then absolutely our organization structures need to evolve to support that. Absolutely. I would hypothesize that it's very difficult to develop a resilient system with distributed decision making and something that provides tremendous capability to its end users by having a rigid, tightly controlled, centrally controlled organization structure. I think the decision making patterns of the organization influence the systems that we create. And you know, as we learn more about developing ever more complex software systems, we need to learn more about developing ever more resilient organizations that can operate effectively in those sorts of conditions.
Definitely. I see the same, right? Because we are creating technologies that are enabling or can enable that change. But at the same time, I perceive the world as some organizations try to maintain everything under control as if it was a complicated system, where the systems are now crossing these boundaries. So I also was looking for your experience, if you feel that we are transforming our own industry, as Simon Worley predicts that around 2030, by weak signal analysis, we will have new social organizational structures.
Right.
And I was getting, because you are in the middle of the hurricane, right? You are doing research and doing the software, which, well, are in the context of an organization.
Indeed.
So I'm curious if these organizations are starting to move to new organizational designs, as you said, to distribute decision-making power.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I like to say a lot in organizations that sometimes troubles people is that control is an illusion anyway. And if we let go of the idea that we can control things really tightly, then what possibilities does that open up for us in terms of the organizations that we can create together, the sort of joyful workplaces that we can have, the outcomes that we can create together? I think there's a lot to explore in that question.
Definitely, there is. I always make the parallel as someone grows inside of the organization and let's say that go from engineering to CEO, so person gets more visible, illusion of control goes up because in the end it's up to the engineers or teams creating software, making all decisions.
Right.
It's not the CEO doing that. So it's very
interesting. And your statement reminds me of something else as well. In that situation where somebody is rising up the career ladder, one thing that I've realized over the years is that your job becomes less and less certain, less and less defined. So when you're an intern or a new graduate, your job is very clearly defined. Somebody is more or less telling you what's expected of you. And there's a comfort in that. You know, you can produce something that either meets that expectation or it doesn't. And there's almost a certainty in the outcome. Whereas as you become more senior engineer, senior architect, senior manager, whatever the case may be, your job becomes not to, you know, in essence, take orders and in a waiter type sense and deliver what was asked for. Your job becomes in part to figure out what questions should we be answering, what problems should we be solving. It becomes much more abstract.
Definitely. This week, so I follow Patrick Kvua newsletter about leadership, and yeah. This week was about leadership is a lonely place, exactly by that, right?
Right.
Which brings us back to cohorts, I think, yeah. Right? So get yeah. other leaders like you and get these cohorts, and at the same time brings back to Knevin, right? The first paper was on the Harvard Business Review, so it was for C-level, picking up these tools to try to make sense of the world. Because it's a tough one, sky is the limit, right? And not all of us are able to cope with a chaotic or perceived chaotic, no boundaries type of work, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there is an inherent discomfort in not having those boundaries to tell you whether something is right or wrong sometimes, and not everybody is comfortable with that discomfort, and understandably so.
Yeah, which is very interesting, right? Because as you go with the ladder, no one tells you that discomfort will increase, right?
Right. Exactly.
So it's very, exactly. very interesting. So cool. So we are, we are in the edge of the end of the episode. So my last question are, what resources do you recommend for people to read or watch, you know, books, podcasts, YouTube videos or other formats to deepen on these topics that we discuss?
Well, let's see. On these topics in particular, there's a few books that I'm reading lately that in different ways address different aspects of what we've talked about. So, I mean, in no particular order, the physicist Sean Carroll has a new book called Something Deeply Hidden, Quantum Worlds and the Emergence of Space-Time. And one of the things I'm enjoying about that book is it just presents a whole new way of looking at the world. And I think anything that, and not just at the world, but at the universe or the multiverse, as the case may be, but anything that alters our perception of how we look at the world, I think is very helpful. There's a quote I like to use. I can't remember the source of it, but if you want small changes, learn to do things differently. If you want big changes, learn to see things differently. And you know, this is one of those books that's currently helping me to see things differently in the universe. Couple of other books, Sarah Knight, The Life-Changing Magic of Not Giving a F-U-C-K, is a really nice book. Esther Derby's 7 Rules for Positive Productive Change deals a lot with making changes in complex systems. Really great book. There's a lady called Sabrina Cohen-Hatton, who is chief of the Metropolitan Firefighting Brigade in London. She wrote a book, I think it's about 2 years old now, but it's called The Heat of the Moment, A Firefighter's Stories of Life and Death Decisions. And she actually draws a lot on some of the ideas we've been talking about in terms of complexity and sense making and decision making in high pressure situations. And one thing I like to do is learn from different fields, see how different fields are applying some of the concepts that we've been talking about. And these are some of the books that have been helping me to think about those things recently. A couple of podcasts I'll mention. Lex Fridman, I think, has a great podcast for anybody that's not familiar with it, Fridman. It used to be called the Artificial Intelligence Podcast. He changed the name, I think, last year, so now it's just the Lex Fridman Podcast. but definitely worth checking out. And Tim Ferriss, I enjoy his podcasts. He's had a couple of great guests on lately, including Jerry Seinfeld and Seth Godin and Yuval Noah Harris. I think were great episodes recently. And on the AI or technology side, Raza Chats. So Raza is an open source AI framework for conversational AI and natural language processing. They do a bi-weekly podcast about conversational AI that touches on all sorts of things, including ethics in AI, as well as the technology and applications of natural language processing and implications of AI for organizations and society. So very interesting stuff.
Cool. Thanks for sharing these resources. I will make sure that they are in description so people can follow that up. And to wrap up, I want to once thank you again for your time to be with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed talking with you.
You can follow us on Twitter at @scraftspodcast. Visit our website softwarecraftspodcast.com or follow our page on LinkedIn. Hope to see you next week.